Thank you very much, Deacon Francis, and everyone else who's hosting this meeting, Adam, and all of the crew here today, and everyone who's made it their Tuesday morning or evening or night or whatever it may be, afternoon, to come and join us here today. You know, I wouldn't be here without you all, you know, and most importantly, I have to give all glory and praise and honour to God for everything that he's done in my life. And this programme has kind of pointed me towards that end, you know. I didn't find God in this programme, but I've definitely drawn closer to him. I apologize for having to drive. Unfortunately, something's just come up within my family, and I need to leave London and drive out as I'm speaking to you now. But I'm not going to let it get in the way of the meeting as much as I possibly can, anyway. And Seth. So yeah, I'd like to start, I suppose, at the beginning. You know, I gambled ever since I was very young. I found it amazing, you know. You could put a coin into a machine, and sometimes you could turn it into more coins, and this and that and the other. And I suppose I got hooked into gambling from a very young age. As I got older, I started to get more deeper in it, you know. Fortunately, it led me on to some criminal acts. I was hanging with the wrong crowd, I suppose. Wanted to be a gangster, quote unquote. And yeah, it led me to some very, very dark places. One time I had to be shot by SO19 with a taser gun, and I woke up on my birthday inside the police station, and they said, "Good morning, Mr. Casey, happy birthday." I said, "Is it?" And he said, "Oh, I'm an SO19 officer who shot you," and he was with the inspector inside Notting Hill police station here near where I live. He said, "As you're the person that was shot," he said, "you're the first person," he said, "that we've shot with the taser gun," he said. "Would you mind if I have a look at your stomach? Because this taser gun entered into my body, very like two small little batteries that you put in the back of a remote control. And that them two stuck in my body, and there was a wire connecting them. And then when he pressed the button, 50,000 volts of electric went through my body." And then I got up. I went down on one knee. I thought I was dead. Thanks be to God, I wasn't. But then I got up and I ran for, I don't know, maybe 10 meters or so. And he pressed it again. And then I just hit the floor like a sack of spuds. And they jumped at me with riot shields and brought me off to the hospital to get injections to take these barbs out of me. But I thank God even for that, because a day beforehand, or maybe a couple of days beforehand, my actions on that night, how horrific they were, I would have been shot with a real gun, and maybe I would have died. I wouldn't be here today, you know. So even in that gruesome act, even though I was so bad, God's hand was still working in my life to save me from ultimate destruction, I suppose. But that's a long time ago, you know. By God's grace, I haven't been arrested or I don't commit crime for over 20 years now. I'm very proud of that. You know, I'm 41 today. It's half of my life. So it was a long time ago. I used to take drugs at that time, and heavy drinking and this and that. And I just used to lose control, to be honest. Very much like the Jekyll and Hyde story, you know. But often do things and I'd have no recollection of them whatsoever. Very, very dangerous. One of my go-to drinks was brandy and port. I think it's the strongest drink in the bar, and I used to go in and drink it as much as I could in order to sometimes to try and forget. Funny enough, I see a lovely member here in this room who, moving on with my life away from that kind of darkness and turmoil and destruction. Even in recovery, I came to a point, at one point I was extremely scared. My little daughter, she was going for an operation, and I had to sign a waiver to have her put asleep. And a lovely man who's here in this room here today, a gal from Scotland, I hope you don't mind me mentioning your name, Al. I rang a few different members and Al rung me back. And that mindset that I had to go to the bar to escape and forget and black out soon changed from the brandy and port to a can of Tango, which is much like an orange can of Coke, or I suppose to describe to you Americans and someone else. You know, it just goes to show how people in the program can be so helpful, you know, and how important, I suppose, the telephone list is. I'm forever grateful to everyone who facilitates these meetings and who first put it on in the first place. You know, when I first joined on the 14th of July 2020, there was no physical room available, and the only room I could join, they were on Zoom. And since then, I've kept coming back. This LA Daily was like my local room, although it's probably 10 hours away on a plane. But I got to meet such wonderful people here, and they've really helped to change my life, you know, one day at a time. The reflections of the day, of these last few days, have been a lot about open-mindedness, you know, and my mind was extremely closed in the beginning, you know, but I had to realize that my way was no good. I mean, I have to listen. If people are living a new life and they're coming in here happy, joyous, and free on a daily basis, people said I was grateful to be a compulsive gambler. I wanted to hit me head off a brick wall. So what's wrong with these people? They're twice as sick as I am. How can you be grateful to be a compulsive gambler? You know what, like my lovely sponsor, Deacon Francis, says, GA is God's answer. And he believes that he was born a compulsive gambler. It was part of his, it was meant to be. Like, it was what God intended for his life. And to be honest, I think the same for me too now. I think that I was, it was kind of, it was meant to be that I was meant to come and meet all of you lovely people from all across the world, from different faiths and religions, or none at all. I respect everyone's right to believe whatever they want. Everyone has a free will choice in the world. But yeah, I suppose for me, it kind of really started when I started putting pen to paper after coming into the room for a little couple of months. There was a lovely man, his name was John from Swindon. Beautiful soul, may rest in peace. And he said to me, Johnny, he said, put pen, you need to start writing down, he said, about this. He said, because your mind is going to want to forget the pain. And that's so true, because how many times did I say before I came in, I'm never going to gamble again? Or that's it, or I took an oath on the Bible, or I swore my uncle's grave, or this or that, that I'd never gamble again. But ultimately, I always went back to that end. So he said, write about the pain. He wanted me to write about the 20 questions, and he guided me through it as a mentor. My first, and it was powerful, extremely powerful. When I started to write, and the tears from my eyes hit the pages. There was something that was happening to my body. I was unlocking the inner chambers of my heart, I suppose. I was starting to open up with these dark places in my mind that I often blocked out through drink or drug abuse, or I suppose even gambling too, because gambling took over so much of my thoughts. If I wasn't gambling, then I'd be thinking about it, or how I'm going to get out of this jam, or where I'm going to get the money from, and then the lying, the cheating, stealing, all of them kind of crookery things, it was always kind of a part of it. And it broke away from many friendships because I didn't have time for friends. I was a gambler. I was spending my most of my time in the bookies, or I'd be hunting for money again, or I'd be lying about where the money went. Even as a father, I'd often come back, and if I had blew all the money, I'd say, "Oh, I lost it," or "The engine blew in the van," or this and that and the other, just continuously lying, 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 lying. I realized, I suppose, much like that beautiful film Liar Liar and Jim Carrey. When it comes a point where he couldn't lie anymore, just for one day, and it was infectious to him, and something happened within him. And then after he could lie, he didn't want to lie anymore. And I can really relate to that in my own life today. I think it was St. Ignatius who said it's always necessary to speak the truth, but it's not always necessary to speak, because even truth can hurt people sometimes if it's brought in the wrong direction and for the wrong reason. So yeah, as I the first day I got a temporary sponsor, lovely man, Mickey's name was, and he was allocated to me from my room, I believe. And anyway, so we started chatting and this and that, and he said, are you willing to go to any length to get well? I said, I am. He said, right. He said, get up in the morning. He said, get on your knees and pray. I don't care who you pray to, he said. Just pray, he said, that you get through the day without placing a bet. Then he said, I want you to write 10 things that you're grateful for. And then send them to me. And then the next day, do the same. But don't, they can't be the same 10 as you gave me the first day. Then he said, I want you to ring two people. No, spend some time in meditation, he said. Then ring two people. And then ring me at 6 o'clock in the morning. Not 5:59, not 6:01, he said. 6 a.m., he said, on the dot, ring me. So I had to get up early. I had to be up early in order to do all of these things beforehand. And potentially, like, go to work or whatever else. But was I willing? As later on, I met up with Deacon Francis, which is such a blessing in my life, through another member who introduced us. And he brought me through the 12 steps of recovery through that wonderful little yellow book. In one part, two, well, I suppose in step one, there's a couple of parts that really stand out to me. One of them, it says that there's no amount of human willpower that can break this illness. And once this fact is accepted, our human concern is complete. It then goes on to say, sorry, I'm getting a bit of a brain lock here because I have to drive and do all these things at one time. That I have to be willing, as only the dying could be, to have this merciless obsession lifted from me. And then, much like Mickey said again, Deacon Francis said, you have to be willing. You've got to put a lot of effort into this. It's not going to come easy, but you really have to be dedicated in order to try and change your mindset from there to here. So we went on that wonderful spiritual journey, and it was amazing, to be honest. from step one. Step two and three was a given to me, to be honest. We didn't have to do much work around that because I'm a Catholic and I was baptized as a young age. I made my Holy Communion at the age of 7. I made my confirmation at 14, I believe. So God was no stranger to me. My Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, I often receive him, body, blood, soul, and divinity in Holy Mass. And I have the privilege to go to confession before I came in and all of these things. So a lot of the things within the steps of recovery, admitting to God the exact nature of your wrongs, et cetera, these are things that I'd always kind of like, I always kind of had in my life anyway. So step four wasn't really very hard. Step five, again, I was able to go to a priest as Deacon Francis invited me to go to a priest and to do my confession with a priest. I spoke to him about some of my wrongs too, as I have here as well. I'm not, my life is an open book today because God has changed me interiorly. But one thing that I'd really like to talk about is one thing that really became evident is that it wasn't about the list of things that I had done wrong. It wasn't about me writing them all down and this and that and the other and naming them all off one by one by one. But it was more about looking at the nature of my wrongs. Where were they rooted? And for me, I can find them in the seven capital sins, as the church calls them. They're better known as the seven deadly sins of pride, greed, lust, avarice, anger, sloth. And I think I might have missed out one. But either way, everything that I do wrong in my life, it can find its root within them in some way, either by excess or defect. I either do too much of something or not enough of it. And pride, I suppose, is named first because it's kind of like the root, where an awful lot of things spring from. Of like I could be angry with someone, but it's because they hurt my pride, in a sense. So then anger and pride are gone together, and so on and so forth. So I really was able to do a lot of work within that. I was very blessed to also have a spiritual director in the London Oratory area from the Oratorians are St. Philip Neri's men, I suppose, in a sense, like the Franciscans are St. Francis's order and the Dominicans are St. Dominic's order and so on and so forth. Well, St. Philip Neri was known as the Apostle of Rome. And I've grown very, very, very close to St. Philip Neri, but in the church, it's called the Church of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, but it's better known as the London Oratory. It's near Harrods in Knightsbridge, in one of the most prestigious parts of London, in South Kensington. I live in Kensington also, but more in the North Kensington, not as posh as the rest of them, I don't think. But anyway, but yeah, it was from going to Mass there daily that really led me in, I believe, to these rooms in the first place. It was there I started to go draw deeper in my faith, and this was like a shackle and chain, I suppose, in my ankle that I couldn't get rid of. It'd always bring me back to it. But yeah, I'm working very blessed with, as I said, with Deacon Francis, also with my spiritual director, Father Peter Doyle. I used to be able to go and have meetings with him, and he'd kind of teach me about the faith and about different kinds of things. And one of the things, again, he taught me about was the seven capital sins. And it just really enlightened me so much. Supposed to talk about maybe just one of them, envy in itself. See, but there's also a kernel good within all of them seven. Now, sometimes people think that they're all bad, you know what I mean? And it just has to be bad, but there's actually a kernel good within them all. And so I suppose with envy, I could turn around and say that, just say Michael Jordan, for instance. Just imagine I wanted to play basketball. And I could take Michael Jordan as, first of all, in negative, sorry, in its negative energy and its defect, I would be like, I hope Michael Jordan breaks his ankle, or breaks his finger so he can't bounce the ball again and I can be better than him. You know what I mean? Or in envy, in its the kernel good of envy would be to look at Michael Jordan as a good spur. Look at him. What does he do in the morning? He gets up, he eats his breakfast, he does a bit of training, he goes away, maybe reads a book, he goes back, he trains again, then he does this, then he does that. What I mean is to try and take him, yeah, to emulate him, as best as I could. Not hoping that anything bad comes to him, but just to try and, as I said already, take him as a good spur. And I could talk a lot about these seven deadly sins, but it would take too long. But this is kind of where I was grounded to learn the nature of my wrongs. And I'm not sitting here. My name is not Saint Johnny here or anything. You know what I mean? I'm a sinner. I'm just trying to work out my salvation with fear and trembling one day at a time. But I'm very blessed to have this wonderful program, to have my faith, to have my Deacon Francis there as my sponsor. Also have a spiritual director in Father Peter Doyle. as well as a loving family and so many beautiful friends around the world who I can call when I need help, you know, when life is bad. And many times in recovery over this last 5 years, things have not always been a bed of roses. You know, after a year, I lost my father in a massive heart attack. He died all of a sudden, and it came as a terrible, terrible pain. The pain I can't put it into words, to be honest. The fright and the pain that I got. I really thought I was going to die myself, to be honest, at one stage. I had palpitations in my heart, cold sweat. I was in a terrible, terrible way. And I remember joining a meeting on my the taxi on the way out to where Daddy died. God, go be good to him. And I was still able to join a meeting, you know, and I don't know if I was able to talk very much. It's all a bit of a blur to me. I was probably crying or screaming. Who knows what I was doing? But I was talking about my feelings and how I'm getting on now, you know, and that's one thing that's really helped me to, I suppose, get to this point in my recovery. You know, is always talk about my feelings and how I'm getting on now. Now, the 12 steps of recovery have been amazing in my life. You know, they're in no way over. You know, I believe that they're something that have to be worked often. I need to continuously look at them. They can never really say that I finished it, you know, although we worked through it. But it's still like I'm powerless over gambling today. I'm not turning around and say, oh, I have power. Like, you know what I mean? I've cracked it. I know I have no power. But, you know, I am a child of the one who has all power. And I just ask him to get through this day without gambling. And that's how I do it, one day at a time. Like it's drilled into our brains over and over again. And if you're new, you know, it may sound a little bit cliche what I'm saying, but it is the truth. You know, I'm very fond of page 17 in America. I think for us, it's page 34, 35. It comes right at the end of the book, the advice for members. I think it's a little bit more graphic, the page 17, and I like it a little bit better, to be honest. Maybe it's because I learned it here. And Frank, who I love very much too, I think it was on my year, I'm nearly sure it was my year celebration, that he sent me a yellow combo book from America, and he put a golden GA pin right at the back of it on page 17. So as I read through the book, I found it at the back, like, you know what I mean? And it was probably one of his own pins that he got himself. It's very kind of you, Frank. I'll be forever grateful to you and many other people who are here. You know, I'll start mentioning people's names. I'm going to go on too long. But you all mean a lot to me, whether you're on day one or day 5,080, whatever it may be. You know, we're all a unit, I suppose. And I believe the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack. When I went to a convention recently, there was a beautiful depiction that a man gave from Scotland. And it was about unity. And he spoke about geese flying. Okay, like it's geese. And as they fly in, they're in a flock of geese, and as they fly. But if something goes wrong with one of the geese and they can't continue to fly, if a goose, one goose, or if there is geese or whatever, then that goose is not allowed to land by itself. At least two other geese have to go with the goose in order that they can take off again, you know, and they can make flight again, and it'll know its own way. It's not allowed to be left alone, because they're a unit, they're a family, you know what I mean? And maybe they weren't born as brother and sister or this or that, but they're all geese, you know? Much like we're all compulsive gamblers. And I believe that we're all family too, in that same kind of way, you know? And I'm very grateful that there's many geese in my phone too, that if I need help, I can draw out, or I can come on a meeting and go all over the world, you know, and draw out. And if I needed to speak to someone, if I didn't have the number, I could say, look, would you mind stay on a little bit after the meeting? Because I'd like to talk to you about something. And if they have time, they will. If they can't, they can't. But if the flock is big, you know, I'm very blessed to have a very big flock. And if the flock is big, then there's a good chance that you're going to get at least one goose, do you know what I mean, that you can talk to. So yeah, look, I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed to be a part of this wonderful, wonderful fellowship, you know, that has changed not only my life, but so many others. The 12 steps has freed me from the insanity of body, mind, and soul, I suppose, you know, that crippling guilt that I used to get. Them backward butterflies that I used to feel when I've thrown it all away again. You know, my life today has such a wonderful balance. I often get it wrong, you know, and my anger, I still get angry at times. My temper needs a bit of a adjustment at times too. It doesn't lead to violence anymore, thank God, which is a wonderful thing, like it used to in the past. You know, but sometimes I can shout, or I can, you know, I can lose my cool in traffic or this or that or the other, whatever else. But hey, I'm a human being still, you know. I'm just trying to do the best I can one day at a time. But my business is going very well. My family life is going very well, thank God. You know, financially, spiritually, mentally, physically, I've never been so well. You know, so I suppose I owe so much to this lovely program because the counterbalance of that, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning of my share about prison, you know, I went to a young offenders prison. I think I was 18. Then I went to a bigger prison when I was 21. By God's grace, I didn't do very long in each prison. Was able to kind of, yeah, was able to. To get away with it, but was able to get off very lightly, well, much more lightly than I should have got potentially. Do you know what I mean? The justice was served anyway in my case, and you know that was just a part of my history. But it doesn't have to be a part of my future, and it doesn't have to define me. You know, I mentioned a couple of saints earlier on, well, Saint Augustine and Saint Francis and Saint Philip Neri, and there's many other saints too. And one thing all the saints have in common is that they didn't all start life well, but they all finished it well. You know, and that's what I'm trying to do. You know, I'm trying to live one day at a time as best as I can. And if I can continue to take that personal inventory and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it, if I can seek through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out, you know, and if I can reach out to other compulsive gamblers who still suffer and be of service to others and let that well of living water spring up within me, you know, and freely give away what's been so kindly given to me. Then hopefully I can keep moving forward. You know, so listen, I'm not going to speak any longer. I think I've went on a bit longer than I was going to already. I kind of got a bit sidetracked with the time, to be honest, because, yeah, but ultimately, look, I'm here because I'm not all there, first and foremost. But being here, you know, it makes me so much more better than I would be otherwise. And the prison insanity and death are so true and it could be. But the counterbalance of that, as Frank so often used to say in the beginning of the meeting, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are the key words in my recovery. So thanks for listening and peace be with you all.
Thank you so much, Johnny. Geese and Goose, I'll remember that one. And we'll go to Deacon Francis now to ask the first question to Johnny.
Right, thank you very much, Adam. My name's Francis. I'm a compulsive gambler. And I haven't had a bet today, nor since my last meeting, which was last Wednesday. And it's good to be here. And to hear Johnny talking like that is just so wonderful. I would like to start by putting in a few things myself before asking Johnny to answer any questions. I was born in Liverpool. And I was raised with my three brothers and three sisters, and we were very poor. But more than that, we had little love expressed to us. I mean, my mum and dad were Catholics, they went to church regularly, but they just couldn't get it together in terms of demonstrative love. So I grew up not knowing a thing about love, and the young life I had was riddled with problems resulting from that lack of esteem and good living, because not only was I a compulsive gambler, I was a compulsive thief and a compulsive liar, and they played a big part in my life where I would commit criminal acts to fund my gambling, and I just was in a total mess, and I used to reconcile my religious faith with my compulsive gambling, because they can't stand side by side, those two. And my dream world that we can read elsewhere was that I was blessed by God to go and win lots and lots of money that I could then use to give to poor people or institutions that needed a helping hand, you see, and that was my excuse for gambling. The fact that I never won anything is quite besides the point. I just kept on doing it. And then one morning, I was just about to get up for work, where I was a teacher, and it just dawned on me very quickly, God doesn't want me to gamble and give all this money away. He just wants me to stop gambling and use my time more effectively and more lovingly. And that's what I did. And after 5 years of being in this school and being in contact with very loving, caring people, it kind of rubs off on you, you know. It kind of rubs off on you, and you can develop from there. And so, you know, that's a rude awakening Monday morning. 5 years later, you know, then after I started work there, I decided to go to GA, and I loved going to GA. I was very, very taken by the number of people who were present at my first meeting, which I always consider to be an act of penance, really, an act of remorse, because I was there to beg forgiveness for all the harm that I'd done, not just to my family and friends, but to myself. And going into the meeting then was made easy by the fact, as Johnny alluded to a few minutes ago. Where was I? Sometimes my mind goes blank because I'm suffering from Parkinson's disease, and also I've got angina. So life is difficult in that respect sometimes. But when I stopped gambling, I dedicated my life to God, because it was God who got me here. It was God who, yeah, in Holy Scripture it says, a sinner was I conceived. A sinner was I conceived. And that leads me to believe that God made me as a compulsive gambler. That was the cross that he wanted me to bear, and that's the cross that he wants each and every one of us here to bear. And so I was bearing my cross to the best of my ability. And why? Because God wanted me, through my compulsive gambling and subsequent recovery, I would be led to God, where he would forgive me, where he would encourage me, where he would commission me to go out and to do good things in the way that good Christian people are, you know, expected to give. And why does God do it that way? He wants us to suffer pain so that we can be drawn closer to him. Because when you've got a toothache, you go to the dentist and he sorts it out. Well, when you've got a compulsive gambling addiction, and you go to God and ask him for help, he gives you that help. And so I was very, very pleased to come to the GA meetings. They were always well attended. We didn't do much about the program of recovery, but yeah, no, that was a feature of the way meetings were run in those days, when I first came. I was told I can't talk about God in the GA meeting, and I'm thinking, well, that can't be right, because we've just read so much about what God does in our world that that can't be right if people say you can't talk about God. I'm here to tell my story. My story is unique. No other story is like it, and that's why storytelling at occasions like this is so very, very important. I tell you my story in an act of love, and you tell me your story in an act of love. So in every GA meeting, you have a great deal of love oozing around and empowering everybody with God's power to go out and do what God wants them to do in that sense. And God chose me in a very special way. My wife and I, we used to go to a church in Kingsley Road in Liverpool. And Father Peter one day said, we need to have a deacon in our parish. And I want you to think about it and make a decision. So a week or two later, Oh, not the same day, actually. Two or three women came up to me and kind of nudged me and said, "You should respond to that, you know." And I said, "Oh, well, thanks very much for letting me know." And then a couple of weeks later, we were away on holiday. And when we got back, I found out that the parish had voted unanimously that I should go forward to be trained as a deacon. And that was a total honor, you know. I mean, when people are asking you to do things like that, you have to respond. And I did. And I was ordained in 2002. And I retired a couple of years ago. God bless me so much in that ministry. I was a celebrant at many, many funerals. I was a hospital chaplain in the women's hospital in Liverpool, where they have a baby ward, of course. And that was a very special ministry. And, you know, going to GA on a daily basis or a nightly basis, I became a servant. I was the secretary for a while. I was the treasurer for a while. And it was just so wonderful that peace and joy was now flowing into my life. So the relationship with my wife that we have together is now growing and growing and growing. More recently, I've been talking to myself and saying, the whole thing about arguments and disagreements is very simple. My wife is always right is something that I've come to adopt as a motto, because I do believe it's right. Because if I give my wife that honor, then it fits in perfectly with Christian belief. You know, it's an act of love. You just do what you think is right, and if I don't agree with it, that's okay. Richard Rohr says, you know, the and, or the both and, is far superior to the, you know, either or. You know, either it's this or it's that. Well, in that crazy world, we get limited. But in the world which says you can have both this and that at the same time, which, you know, are things that might be mutually exclusive in a normal way, that's the difference, you know. So, you know, I just thank God for bringing Johnny into my life as well. Because as he's mentioned already a few times, you know, we were together and we'd had lots and lots of conversations and prayer and readings and understanding of what God's was requiring of us. And I just think it's wonderful the way he's developed as a person. And I would like to ask him a question, and the question is very simple. How do you expect to be serving God in the future?
Thank you very much, Deacon Francis, for that lovely share and also for everything that you've done in my life. How do I expect? Well, I think you kind of summed it up there as well in your own share. You know that I also alluded to it too about being in Gamblers Anonymous. So I really believe that God has called me to a role here too, you know, to try and help the compulsive gambler who still suffers. Hopefully, try and carry a message of hope that, as Rocky said, if I can change, you can change, then we all can change. You know, additionally to that, recently I'm going to be put forward for a national role in being the coordinator for the telephone line for which I came in. So obviously I don't know if I'm going to get accepted or not. It would be down to the board members to vote me in or not. But I'm going to try to do more. You know, additionally to that, through my calling as a Christian, you know, I'm called to feed the homeless and clothe the naked, visit the sick. No, and spread the gospel, I suppose, you know, the good Lord, the good news that the kingdom of God has come. So thanks again and peace be with you.
Thank you so much for that share, Francis. That was a fantastic share. I'm really grateful for that.
Thank you, Adam.
And we'll go to Mark M for the next question for Johnny.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for sharing. Johnny, sorry, my name's Mark. I'm a compulsive gambler. I haven't gambled today, haven't gambled in a number of years. I am so happy to be here on the 5th anniversary of Johnny finding GA through Zoom. You were the kind of poster child for Zoom, especially when you got to 1 year, because it kind of proved to everyone that actually this was a feasible way of finding recovery in Gamblers Anonymous, which shut a lot of people up, to be quite honest. But some of them are still saying it doesn't work. You mentioned in your share when you were talking about the steps, you mentioned, and you and I both know we'll never agree exactly on faith. I am not a good Christian, but I was quite happy to hear you talk about these seven deadly sins, which got me thinking. So I did a little search. You know, not one of those single things, pride, greed, wrath, envy. I mean, how often are those things discussed at GA meetings? Lust, gluttony, sloth. These are common topics. They come up in many, many meetings. You know, not a one single one of those is mentioned in the combo book. Not one. You know, and there's me thinking my gambling was all about greed, and it probably was. Pride, that was my life. So I have a question, Johnny. Pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, or sloth. Over the last 5 years, which one has reduced most?
Oh wow! Thank you very much, Mark. First of all, for being here and for everything you've done for me over this 5 years, it's been an honour to know you, to be honest. And hopefully, I look forward to meeting you in person again soon, please God. Wow! I would like to say envy. You know, I used to be envious so much of other people, what they had, and this and that and the other. I think the most envy. Pride can still rear his ugly head at times. Yeah, and so can many of the other ones. But if I was to pick one that has, I think, yeah, you know, I'm happy with whatever else people have. Beforehand, I used to be envious, thinking I used to get more money than them, and look what they have, and I haven't got anything, and da 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 da, and this and that, and whatever else. So yeah, if I was to answer your question, I think envy would be the one I believe by God's grace has decreased the most. Thank you.
Thank you so much for answering that question, Johnny. And we'll go to Frank S. now for a question for Johnny.
Yes, hi everyone. My name is Frank S., a grateful recovering compulsive gambler. Today marks 5,289 days, and today's the most important day. I'm so happy to be here. Congratulations, Johnny. I'm off camera mostly, and I might have to leave abruptly. We're waiting for an appointment, somebody, a medical professional, coming over in just a minute. Your share was absolutely amazing. You're an amazing person. We all know that. Look at the people that have showed up for you. And I, you know, it's been difficult for me to get to meetings in a lot of ways recently, but you know, I wouldn't miss this for the world. And I show up for people who show up for people, and you're one of those guys. And one of the things you've done early on, which is, you know, Mark talked about being the poster boy for Zoom, but for our program, is that you took direction early on. You know, you let go of that pride and that ego that many of us have, and you talked about emulation and how important that is. You know, if you want what someone has, just do what they do, and you surrounded yourself with good people, and it's just absolutely amazing how your life has progressed, and to hear you share about all the wonderful things that are happening. And still, you're so actively involved in so many aspects of GA. You remain, you know, as excited and committed, as passionate about this program as when you first came in. And you know, I'm going to ask you a question about that. But I need to say something stupid or silly, because you've admitted you to be a sinner. That's okay. A sinner won Wimbledon last weekend. Anyway, Johnny, how do you maintain this passion, this excitement, your commitment after 5 years to the program? I think it's even exceeded what it was in the beginning. That's just so just blows me away. How do you do that?
Thank you very much, Frank. Thanks for everything over this period of 5 years. It's been wonderful getting to know you, you know, drawing from your hope, your strength, your wisdom, and your love. You know, and I'll be forever grateful for that. I could speak a lot about even our own friendship. I was going to go on too long, but how do I do that? I suppose it's just about keeping it fresh. When I went to a convention recently, someone got up and said, the longest person off a bet is the person who got up earliest this morning. And really refreshing that day at a time. Each day I'm not guaranteed that I'm not going to place a bet. So I need to keep it fresh and remind myself, that I know that there is a way that I can get well. And for me, that way is the GA. It's joining a meeting, talking to other members and doing the suggested things that they've told me. I spend a lot of time in the dark. So I'm now in the light, but the light has to be relit each day. Because when I go to sleep, that candle goes out, I suppose, in a sense. So in the morning, I get up and I relight that light again, and that's kind of like the passion, I suppose. Yesterday's shower, as they say, don't keep you clean today. So yeah, for me, it's really remembering that there is no cure for this illness that I suffer from. I get a daily reprieve, which is maintenance on my spiritual condition. And even when my spiritual condition is still not great, I join a meeting. If I'm feeling spiritually fit, I join a meeting. And I try to go to physical meetings too. And yeah, I really love the program. And I've got so many friends now who mean so much to me. I didn't know how much they meant to me until, unfortunately, some of them have passed away and left this world. And then when grieving for their members, who some of them I never even physically met, I realized how much you all mean to me. And I suppose I joined to be a goose, and to try, fly with the flock one day at a time. God bless. Peace be with you.
Thanks a lot for answering that, Johnny. Great answer. And Socky?
Thank you. My name's Saki. I'm a compulsive gambler. Date of absence, August 24th, 1988. Adam and everyone else, thank you for your service. I'm listening to Johnny's share, and I remember Johnny's first 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, and 1 year. 5 months later, brother, wow, you amaze me. When I first met you 5 years ago in 2020, you were a sponge. You cried. You listened, you asked questions, you did everything that someone new should do, and you listened. And I'm so proud of you to call your brother, to listen to your words of the last 5 years of the way you turned your life around, the way you're helping others. And I have to tell you, brother, I love you. So I want to just let you know what you mean to me. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You mean so much to me too, Scott Saki. You're able to build me up with hope, strength, experience, and ultimately show me that it could be done. Because both you and another lovely member had decades when I came into the program, so I was like drawn back by that, but also very attracted to that. To say, well, if they can do it, then maybe I can do it too. So thank you very much for being a pillar of strength in this wonderful community and all that you do for everybody. Peace be with you, brother. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, and we'll go to Stephen W. next for a question.
Hey everybody, Stephen W. Compulsive Gambler, date of my last bet, February 24, 2023. Johnny, great share. I got so much out of it. I'm at a church conference, and it was just so apropos that the things that you were talking about kind of just fell right into place today. Especially what you talked about with Michael Jordan and the envy, because that's what I'm struggling with in my job, where I get envious of my colleagues, where if I see that they're doing better than me, and I know I should applaud them. Instead, I still have that jealousy and envy that I used to have when I gambled. I had that jealousy and envy because I wanted to be like the person next to me that was able to control themselves. So my question is what or how did you put that aside? Was it through prayer? Was it through meditation? Was it like what exactly helped you? Because I think that that'll help me. And I thank you in advance for answering that.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for your question and for being here. Suppose, like I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier on, it's when I found out that within them seven deadly sins is everything that I possibly do wrong is caught up within them seven. I decided to study it, to try and learn a little bit more about it. And as I mentioned earlier on, I have a priest and a deacon, I suppose, in my corner to kind of guide me and help me along with these things who are obviously like quite good in theology and philosophy and all this kind of stuff. But I suppose really, by moving through the program, going into the darkness of my soul, and cleaning out the closet, and then when the closet was clean and I've moved all of the dirt away and admitting to God and everything and seek forgiveness for what I've done wrong, then I suppose I was able to turn over a new leaf. But it really, really helped me to spend some time on really going deeper into them, studying the actual meaning behind them. And as I said already, about finding that kernel good that was is within all of the seven, and especially with envy, about taking it as a good spur. So if I see someone doing better than me now, just wish them luck and thinking, oh, that's good. I wonder what they're doing. So maybe they might be in a different, they might have a better flyer than me for business, or they might decide to put themselves in a local newspaper, and because of that, they get more work. I run a building construction company, so I can only kind of relate it to my own work. But maybe just to try and emulate them as best I can, but also then just to be happy in my own skin. Like our Lord said, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And a lot of within the program we hear that perfection is not obtainable. Well, I don't agree with that. I believe that if I do the best I can in a certain area, like I'm just driving this vehicle now because I have to see my brother in a case of emergency here right now. But I've driven this motor as best I could on the way here. I haven't speeded. I've kept between the lines. I've kept looking around me. I've watched for other people and their safety. Granted, maybe I shouldn't be on the phone, but just in general, if I do the best I can, then that's my perfect. So I think you just keep doing the best you can, and then that's your perfect. And if there's certain areas that need a little bit more help, then maybe train a little bit more harder in them areas if that's what you really want. If that's what you think that you need to kind of progress and move forward. But yeah, I will just be happy with each day, because as my sponsor tells me, everything in your life, Stephen, is as perfect as what it can be right now. So I hope that helps.
Great answer there, Johnny. And we'll go to Jack.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Jack, compulsive gambler. Just wanted to say thank you for your share. Your story's inspirational. And you mentioned about spreading the message of hope to other compulsive gamblers who still suffer. And the story that you've shared, I mean, that will definitely, that if that's not a beacon of hope, I don't know what is. Your journey going from young offenders to incarceration to where you are now is just phenomenal. And it reminded me that, my local meeting in Wolverhampton, we twice a month we go into prisons and actually do a GA meeting in the prison. And we get to speak to compulsive gamblers who, are locked up and they still have avenues to gamble, but despite the fact that they're in the situation they're in, they still don't gamble. And to me, that's just, an inspiration, being locked up in a cell and still not wanting to do it, despite the fact that you have nothing else to do, really. It's inspirational, and spreading that message is so important. And it's something that, this share tonight is something that I'll remember for a long time. I think my question to you is, we get a lot of new people come and go, and I think for a lot of new people, step one is the hardest thing to comprehend. Actually admitting that you are powerless over gambling and that your life is unmanageable. From your perspective and, your personal experience, when did that step one really sort of take effect for you? When was there a particular moment where you thought, yeah, I can't do this anymore? And again, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jake, for your share. And also, like I said, thanks for all the work that you're doing with the young offenders, because also it's people like you that helped me to get back on the right road initially them many, many years ago. Oh dear, I hope I haven't forgot your question now. Oh dear, my brain, my brain. Surrender.
Step one,
Yes.
Johnny.
About the powerlessness. Yeah, one moment. Yeah, so I think for me, Jake, and for everyone, it says it so right in the preamble of the Gamblers Anonymous program in America. And we don't have the same over here, but it says that the first step in my recovery is to admit that I am a compulsive gambler. It says the delusion that we're like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. We've lost the ability to control our gambling. We know that no real compulsive gambler ever regains control. All of us felt at times we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably be followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. They were very posh words for me. I didn't really understand them big long words, but I felt them in my stomach. I know what they mean because I felt it over and over again when I'd lost everything again and I'm lying in the bed in isolation and what have I done? How am I going to do? Get this to what I should have, could is all that stuff. So, yeah, first I had to admit that I was a real compulsive gambler, and I believe that was the first step and before I could even move into actually going on the 12 steps of recovery. But then it was easy for me to. I suppose it didn't come too easy in the beginning because I used to box when I was young and, no retreat, no surrender and this and that. But, I have two choices. I could surrender to the program, surrender to God, accepting God in my life and looking for a new way of life, guided by many others who have all lead a new lives. Or I can surrender still to more pain, more sorrow, more sadness, more nothingness, more worthlessness, feeling less than, feeling like nothing. So yeah, I wanted to be relieved of that. I wanted the joy and peace of having all of that taken away, the pain, the sorrow, the sadness, the guilt, the shame, the shackle and chain that I'd held onto for so long, isolation and all of them kind of things. So for me, it was about letting that was the avenue I needed. I needed to surrender one way or the other. So I surrendered to the program. God's answer for for me. All the best. Thanks.
Thanks, Johnny, and we'll go to Jennifer P next.
Hi, thank you. Hi, Johnny. Thank you for your share, and God bless you for your journey. And wow, what a share! Thank you. So my question is, as a new member, I should say, because I have 144 days, even though I've been in GA a long time, I'm still going to say, as a new member, what do you recommend? What prayer do you recommend for a new member like me? To keep going after I've admitted I'm compulsive, after I've admitted I'm powerless, and once I accept that I have a higher power, what prayer do you recommend I say on a daily basis?
Are you a Christian, Jennifer, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, Jennifer. Yep.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I could only say no better prayer than the prayer that our Lord Himself gave us. The Our Father prayer. I would say to say the Our Father slowly and to meditate on the words and what it actually means. Because within that beautiful prayer is a wonderful guide to live in and lets us know that our Lord is there with us, guiding us, and He'll never let us go. And He asks us to forgive others as we have been forgiven, and just to try and do our best each day. So yeah, I would say to meditate on the Our Father prayer. Say it slowly and in a nice quiet space, and hopefully that'll help you. All the best. Peace be with you.
Thank you very much, Johnny. And we'll go to George C. next.
Hi, Johnny. George C. here. Thank you very much for your share. You talked the whole time, didn't have any brief interruptions or anything like that, and I really liked that. My question to you is, character defects and amends. Is there a difference and what is it? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, George. Lovely to see you, and thank you for all your help over this journey too. I've known you now, I think, since the start, and you've been a very big help in my recovery. So thank you very much, and peace be with you, brother. Yeah, I think so. My character defects are, I suppose, my sinful behaviors, my addictions, my compulsions, and everything else along them kind of lines. My amends, they came a little bit after. So I think that the program is designed so wonderfully that once I've worked on my character defects as best I can, I'm able to kind of move. I don't think I've still got the character defects today. But what I mean is, once they've been highlighted and I'm able to try to illuminate them and do the best I can with them through the step work, step nine is the end of the journey in a sense. It's put there, I believe, for a reason, so that when I'm a bit more spiritually well, I'm able then to go out and make amends. I'm able to accept rejection then should it come too, but also be very careful not to do it for my own benefit, and go out and hurt other people's feelings just because I want to feel well and I want to feel complete. There's a lot of amends I can't make in this world for many different reasons. But if I see someone who's hungry on the side of the road, and I've got the price of buying them a sandwich and a cup of tea, I can go and do that and go and sit down and have a little chat with them. Because I think that the worst thing in this world is for people not to feel any kind of love, and to try and show some kind of love and compassion for someone is a wonderful thing. And God's love for me, and I believe for all of us, I hope it doesn't offend anybody, but the way my faith is what we're taught, and this is that God's love for us never changes. His love is always there. God is without change, ever new, ever old. They're always, I'm going to go into another one there, but yeah, so God's love doesn't change. So just to try and show that love as best I can, as a Christian, we're called to love the Lord our God with all our mind, with all our heart, and with all our soul, and to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. So that's what I kind of practice on as best as I can. So yeah, just trying to do everything as you can with love, and to know that I am going to make mistakes, but it's okay as long as I just try and use them the other maintenance steps. Moving forward, all will be well. But this side of before I go to heaven to be judged by my Lord, I'm always going to have character defects. So I just have to accept that for what it is and try and do the best. For instance, I don't watch horror films all day and then complain that I've had a nightmare. So I suppose, like they say, you are what you eat. I try to feed myself with good things. Peace be with you. I hope that helped.
Thanks so much for
Thank you,
answering
Jim.
that, Johnny. And we've got Dan H now with a question for Johnny.
It's more of a comment. Thank you so much, Adam, and thank you to everybody that's helping in the background. Johnny, you're my I was your co-host for many years doing the second Tuesday of the month. We've been through so many things together. So I'm just so grateful that you're able to come back again and share with us. Things move on. You're such a busy man. I have no idea how you even have time for anything between your wife, your beautiful daughters, the work you do all the time, the service with everybody at meetings, in person, at the meeting. You're just an amazing person. I just wanted to acknowledge that. I'm so glad that you came back and you're able to speak with us tonight. And we'll have your recording on top of so many others in our recorded files there. We'll be right on top now, Johnny C. Congratulations. I know, you didn't mention it that much, but I know yesterday you celebrated 5 years, which is an amazing, amazing, amazing accomplishment as well. And I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing with us, and also for Deacon Francis for being here as well with us and sharing as well. Just a beautiful, beautiful share. Thank you both for that. Thank you, Adam.